Welcome to the Sensible Socialist Podcast, a podcast for the rational left.
We need to unite and work together if we're all going to get through this.
Sounds like socialism to me.
The amount of people I see talking about socialism positively is actually staggering.
Do you think, do you really think that a proletarian revolution is just around the corner in America?
Grab your pitchforks and stab your mayor.
No hero Obama.
He's not my hero. How heroic he does.
If Bernie Sanders were president, right, and he wanted to bring the same ideas for socialism into this country, do you think that we would benefit? But I just told you Venezuela's eating rats.
But I just want people to have health care. I don't want,
Same thing Hugo Chavez.
Oh my god.
You people have, worms in your brain, honestly.
All right, welcome back to the Sensible Socialist Podcast. I am your host, Kevin Gustafson. And I just want to say, I know that I've been out a few weeks, and there is a reason for that, and that is what we're going to talk about today. But first, before we do that, the big news since I've been away is, of course, the Mueller report came out, at least in terms of being reviewed by the Justice Department and by the Attorney General, William Barr, who I want to just say, released a summary to Congress that basically said that there was no collusion and there was evidence on both sides for obstruction of justice. But I would say that William Barr is not a person to be trusted. And so the report is not out yet fully, yet we hear all sorts of commentary from the left that's saying, this whole thing has been such bullshit. To people on the right-hand side saying that that this is a total exoneration, including the president himself. And so it's not a total exoneration, but it's also not clear what exactly the report says because we haven't seen the damn thing. So there's a supposedly news that it's going to come out sometime in mid-April. There's overwhelming support for why it should be released. So I'm going to reserve commentary about it until we get the report. So that's been the biggest news. There's also, continuing issues in Venezuela and other issues, but we'll talk about those in the upcoming podcasts. The last podcast I released was about Sam Harris, and I tried to email and contact Sam and see if he would be willing to respond and to talk about that issue, and to also submitted a desire to get him to at least talk to Richard Wolff or someone who is a reputable Marxist, and I have gotten nothing. So that's, I think, pretty much dead in the water when it comes to that. I will still keep trying in whatever venue I can, but I think that we'll just have to stand as it is. So, all right, on to the main issue this week. The main issue this week is capitalism and mental health. The reason I wanted to talk about this is it's the reason I've been off for a few weeks. So, it's been a few weeks now, and I imagine if any regular listeners wondering why that is. The truth is I've been I basically discovered and that I likely suffer from a mental health issue, a combination of anxiety and bipolar. I've been seeing a therapist, had gotten to a psychiatrist, and essentially got a diagnosis and got some pills and had to significantly adjust my lifestyle. There's a tendency to see mental illness and mental health issues as merely physiological problems, that there's something wrong with the brains of folks like me. But the truth is there's something a lot more to it. And I think a little bit of my background will help. I have talked about this a bit on the podcast, but I want to go a little bit deeper into depth about that and kind of, I think, give an explanation a bit as to why. So When I was about 15 or so, I really had to go to church all the time and had realized that essentially, I didn't really buy any of that, and became a pretty convinced atheist, and had a bit of an angry atheist phase, but really sort of came out, if you will, as an atheist. And soon thereafter, I also, you know, actually went through the whole process of animal husbandry in terms of specifically beef cattle. And it was that experience that essentially made me become a vegetarian. And at 16, that was in 2001, you know, we had September 11th and the beginning of perpetual war. And so I also graduated college just before the economic crisis in 2008. So it gives you a bit of a background that, you know, essentially my life has been a series of letdowns and lost opportunities. And I can see and admit even a certain amount of my privilege, for lack of a better word. I'm not super keen on that word, but I, you know, in terms of geopolitically, I was born in the United States. That's a certain privilege. I am white and a man, which you know, allows certain privileges. But even with all of those, I have had disappointments, lost opportunities, and a significant understanding of, I think, why these issues are coming about, the underlying and deep causes for them. But it's never gotten better, and it's always made me really angry and really disappointed. I knew how things could be, and I could see how things were, and there's a serious difference between those things. And there's a lot of unfairness and injustice in the world, not only just in my own personal situation where I've lost opportunities or haven't been able to realize something, but also the inequality and injustice that pervades our system worldwide. And so, you know, it doesn't take much more than a walk down the street with an open mind and a clear vision to be able to see what problems there are in the world today. And we'll hear a lot of people like Steve Pinker and other people say, you know, this is the best time that it's ever been to live. And there is some truth to that. Certainly the ability, you know, there's been advances in medical science and technology that have been able to interconnect the world. But there are fundamental problems with our system that haven't been corrected and that persist in destroying the mental well-being of people in this system. And you don't need to look very much farther than some statistics. I mean, half of all the adults in the United States will probably develop one mental illness during their lifetime. 45 million experience psychiatric disorders. This is in the United States. Suicide rates are right now at a 30-year high, and they are extremely high among younger people, specifically younger girls. And that the trend of self-harm and all those kinds of things is incredibly high among younger people. Substance abuse, which is something that I also, you know, dealt with, that's become, you know, an epidemic. Opioids and alcohol and all of those things. I mean, it's just something that everyone in some ways is dealing with. And to top all this off, you have this new culture of social media and online connectiveness and influencer culture that really is just a mask for a huge amount of social isolation. And, you know, the National Alliance on Mental Illness sort of makes it clear why, like, gives even some other statistics that I think are important, like 9.8 million adults experience serious mental health issues in a given year, and that substantially interferes with or limits major life activities like having children or working. 20.2 million adults experience substance abuse. That was in like 2014, but I'm sure that's even worse in the last 5 years. And like I said, over 50% are, you know, experience a continuously occurring mental illness that just rides either under the surface or over the surface. And in some ways, I think it's not a secret as to why this is. You know, if you look at the famous Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which is from 1943, you have a number of different layers that go into one's overall feeling of well-being. And this is one thing that even, you know, money, there's been statistics and studies done where, you know, $100,000 a year will usually get you to a certain level where you're not anxious or depressed, but it doesn't give you genuine self-worth and well-being. And so if you look at like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the first and most fundamental are like psychological needs, physiological needs. So that's air, water, food, shelter, sleep. These are the basic things that you need to live. You know, without these, you literally die. The next level above that is safety needs. So personal security, employment, access to resources, health, those kinds of things. These are things where, you know, to be honest, even the physiological needs are not always met. You look at something like Flint, Michigan, where they have lead in their water. You get a notice if you live in a city, you have like a 5-year lower life expectancy if you live in a city because the air isn't clean. Our housing situations are unbelievable. And we've talked about that on this podcast when I talked to my friend Delonte. But this issue of housing is a perpetual issue for everyone. And the access to it is very difficult. And the idea of ownership for people, especially in my age group, millennials and younger, is just like not even something that most people can really think about. So these issues are even hard to get, but like the safety needs, personal security. Many times the organization that's supposed to take care of that are the police, and they're the things that actually make us the most scared. Employment issues. Obviously, employment is incredibly difficult to hear, to find. You hear advertisements on, you know, the radio and on TV for job websites that aren't advertising to the employee. They're advertising to the employer because it's such an employer's market that it's an obvious that people are looking for jobs. What's not obvious or what's harder to find is actually the right people for the right jobs, because you can have ridiculous qualifications for even entry-level positions. We've all experienced that. You come out of college, you're hoping to get a job, and even all of the entry-level jobs want 5 years of experience. And so there's always a difference between how much experience you have and how much experience is desired, because it's an employer's market. And it also tends to drive down wages, which impacts our ability to get resources. So if you're not making a decent wage, you're not able to get the things that you both need and want. And so this relationship between the employment issue and resources is a serious issue. Health, that is, especially in the United States, something that is a significant issue. After I was diagnosed and was prescribed the medication I had, because of the horrible health insurance that I have, the cost of the medication was, with a $600 off coupon, $400 a month. So that, you know, I'm lucky in some ways to be able to have just enough to be able to pay for that. But that's a significant amount of money that I have to spend just to keep myself sane. The third level on Maslow's hierarchy is love and belonging, and that's friendship, intimacy, family, and a sense of connection. And what we see with the rise of social media and those kinds of things is this false sense of connection where, oh, I have 50 friends on Facebook or 500 or 5,000 friends on Facebook, but how many people do you talk to and hang out with in person on a daily basis? Many of us don't. Many of us go home, go to work, and spend our times in mediated friendships on computers. Our intimacy and friendships suffer significantly because there's this fear of losing out. And so even if you make a plan, it's always a tentative plan because there might always be something better. In intimacy, we have the rise of Tinder and other things like that, where it's a very much a sex-based relationship with most people, and that intimacy, the idea of really connecting with somebody else and understanding somebody else, has completely gone away because of the ease at which you can engage in sexual intercourse. Our family lives are even coming apart, mostly because of issues of political differences and other things like that, where we just can't overcome the kind of controversy that we're inevitably going to have with our siblings and our parents and our and other members of our family, sometimes due to generational issues and other things like that. But our family systems are breaking down, and they are not as strong or not as important for most people as they used to be. The next level, and this is getting up to really the sort of high level parts of the hierarchy of needs, is esteem. So that's respect, self-esteem, status, recognition, strength, freedom. And these are, again, even tougher to realize in the modern day. The interactions that we're having, both off and online, very rarely deal with respect. They often come at strawmanning and disrespecting other people, or at minimum disallowing, or at maximum disallowing people from engaging in the kind of social intercourse that we would benefit from to be able to actually get people's understandings out. Self-esteem, again, social media has a huge impact on this because there's always something better. And if you're not an influencer on Instagram, or you don't have millions of followers like the most important people on Twitter or Facebook, then you're not as good. You're not as important. You can't influence society in the way that you want to. And those of us that have platforms, you know, like this podcast and other things, we desperately want to see views and clicks and how many people like it and comments. And we're being bombarded by all of these ways of trying to like tickle our self-esteem. But what they end up doing is tickling our anxiety. Status is another thing. The inability to gain respect from other people and to be seen as somewhat of an expert, because there's always somebody with something to say, is inhibiting our ability to feel important and feel like we have something to say that people should listen to. That goes with recognition. We often don't recognize the time, energy, and work that people are putting in. We don't see this at our jobs because we're not paid fairly. We don't see this among our friends or colleagues, because even if we're doing something, say, outside of work, very rarely does anyone, you know, come to those things and show a certain amount of respect and recognition to us. Freedom, these things are all wrapped up in one another, but we don't feel free. I don't think a lot of people, especially in the United States or in the West, feel that they're free to be able to do whatever they want. That our decisions in what commodities we purchase or anything like that are extremely constrained by our ability to purchase them, what is actually available, and how we get these things. And even with something like the rise of Amazon, where you can supposedly get whatever you want, what it ends up turning out and churning out is a sort of commodity fetishism, where the most important thing is just what you can buy. And this relates to the most important and the highest point in Maslow's hierarchy of need, which is self-actualization, the desire to become the most that a person can be. And if you look at people's work lives, which is in some ways where they should be self-actualized, most of the people who are working at a job are not working at that job because that's what they really want to do. Most people are working at a job because they need to pay the bills. And the bills are getting more and more expensive, and their wages are not increasing. So not even are we not able to find these means of self-actualization, we are seeing roadblocks and hindrances to this in every single place that we go. And so what's the deal, right? The deal is that the system that we live in, this capitalist superstructure, we have this base, this economic base that focuses on commodity production and profit making instead of the fulfillment of human needs. That, at the basic level, is the reason why we have the issues that we're seeing with the amount of people who have all the problems that they have. By failing to provide people with our psychological and safety needs, capitalism dooms us to failure in our mental health. there's a reason why happy hour is at 5 o'clock and it's called happy hour, because the 8 hours that you work before 5 o'clock are unhappy hour. These issues lead directly to mental health problems. And we're seeing a huge rise in anxiety and anxiety-related issues because people don't feel like they can get by in the world and that they have anything to show for themselves. And they're not wrong that these are serious fundamental issues that are not just about the way you look at society, although there is certain ways that you can find some coping mechanisms and to try to do something about it. But there's really nothing we can do about this aside from organizing together and changing the system. There is no cure for the mental health and opioid and other substance abuse crisis other than a system change against the system we currently have. Nothing else will work. And why is that? Well, I think it goes back to Marx, honestly. In the 1844 manuscripts, Marx talks about estranged labor. And I think, first of all, it's really beautifully written, and a lot of Marx is not beautifully written. And so it's really great to actually read a bit of it. But he talks about the relationship that a person has to their work. And for Marx, he's got a whole idea about our human nature, our species being, that what differentiates human beings from other animals is this ability to work and to produce and to you know, use tools to produce things. And capitalism has an amazing way of just churning this out and generating this to an amazing degree, but it doesn't do it without significant costs. And the cost is the mental health and the position of the worker in relationship to the production, in relationship to what makes him or her the most human. And I want to read a little bit of it because I think it's just an amazing thing that Marx writes, and you can check this out. I'll put a link to it in the description. But he says, the worker becomes all the more poorer the wealth he produces. The more his production increases in power and size, the worker becomes an ever cheaper commodity, the more commodities he creates. The devaluation of the world of men is in direct proportion to the increasing value of the world of things. Labor produces not only commodities, it produces itself and the worker as a commodity. And this at the same rate at which it produces commodities in general. This fact expresses merely that the object of labor produces, labor's product, confronts it as something alien, as a power independent of the producer. The product of labor is labor which has been embodied in an object, which has become material. So it's the objectification of labor. So labor's realization is its objectification. So under these economic conditions, this realization of labor appears as a loss of realization for the workers. Objectification as a loss of the object and bondage to it, as appropriation, as estrangement, as alienation. So much does the laborer's realization appear as a loss of realization that the worker loses realization to the point of starving to death. So much does objectification appear as a loss of the object that the worker is robbed of the objects most necessary not only for his life, but for his work. Indeed, labor itself becomes an object which he can obtain only with the greatest effort and with the most irregular interruptions. So much does the appropriation of the object appear as estrangement that the more object the worker produces, the less he can possess, and the more he falls under the sway of his product, capital. All of these consequences are implied in the statement that the worker is related to the product of labor as an alien object. For on this premise, it's clear that the more the worker spends himself, the more powerful becomes the alien world of objects which he creates over and against himself. So the poorer he himself, his inner world, becomes, the less belongs to him and his own. It's the same in religion. The more man puts into God, the less he retains in himself. The worker puts his life into the object, but now his life no longer belongs to him, but to the object. Hence, the greater this activity, the more the worker lacks objects. Whatever the product of his labor is, the worker is not. Therefore, the greater his product, the less he is of himself. The alienation of a worker in his product means not only that his labor becomes an object, an external existence, but that it exists outside him, independently, as something alien to him, and that becomes a power of its own confronting him. It means that the life that which he has conferred on the object confronts himself as something hostile and alien. I think this is really close to what we see in our modern society, where it is so much about the things that we want and not about the life that we're living. That the way that you judge someone's success is by what they have, what kind of house, what kind of car, what kind of cool things that they have. And there's a whole business and way of extracting value that's just about brands. It isn't about the actual value of the thing that you're buying. It's about what it confers in terms of status. And status is related to commodities. And so if you aren't able to get the commodity that gives you status, you don't have anything. And I think that this fundamental principle that we are in an economic relationship that one exploits us and therefore doesn't pay us enough to get the commodities that we produce, but also alienates us. And it just doesn't alienate us from our labor. It alienates us from the things that we see as the way to get status. The whole thing is fake, and it doesn't make any sense fundamentally. But it's an ideology. It's an ideology that's pushed on us from the very beginning of our lives. And the more that we're able to consume media, the way in which this comes into our lives through advertising and the moral lessons that we learn from our media, the more this is ingrained in us, even though we fundamentally understand that there's something wrong with it and that it doesn't work. I think that we don't need to be surprised by the fact that people are not happy, that they are upset, and that they don't have any way, or they don't feel any way, of getting out of it. That this is in some ways just the way that life is. And so you have to find a way to deal with it. And there's something to that. That yes, there is a world that is objective and real right now. And there are parts of that world that you have to understand and that you have to live with so long as they remain. But that doesn't mean that you don't need to work to change them. Because so many people just go through their life using alcohol or weed or pills as a way of numbing the pain, as getting away from the problems that plague us every single day. I mean, you look at these new places like WeWork and other kinds of things, and they have alcohol at the office because they know that if you have a drink while you're working, it may not seem so bad. There are not going to be long-term good solutions from this way of dealing. It is a way of dealing. I have done so myself. And it can work for a period of time. You can feel better. But it isn't a long-term solution. And it isn't a way that you're ever going to get out of it. The only real way that we're ever going to change this system is by uprooting the social basis of our society and the economic foundation on which it rests. We need to change the relationship that we have to labor. We have to find a way to self-actualize. And we have to turn our society back, not back, but forward, towards one that recognizes the fundamental specialness of human beings, of each and every human being, and gives them an opportunity to realize that self-worth. But that system isn't capitalism. And anybody who tells you that it is feeding you snake oil. Because it isn't a mystery why we're having these issues. You'll hear people, and there's something to it, that say that this is a generational issue, And that specifically, you know, the not the millennial generation, but the generation after that, the tech generation, or, you know, generation, the digital generation, are weak. They aren't able to deal with the reality of the world, that they have been coddled. And there is something true to that. But what they also have is information and the ability to weed through the propaganda that's going on in our society. And they can realize fairly easily how much of a lie the system is based on. And when you shackle people with debt in order to give them an opportunity, and then don't give them the opportunity, it shouldn't surprise you that they're stressed out, and that they're anxious, and that they take to drink or drugs. The way that we get the solution to this problem is by getting together and organizing against this system. As much as I love Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the social democracy system that they want to create does not fundamentally change the relationship that we have to our labor and to commodities. Sure, they might make us have a little bit better access to healthcare, and that's a good thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. But unless we fundamentally uproot this relationship that we have, I don't see a solution to this. And the alienation that comes from labor is only going to increase when we're not even doing the labor. When it's machines and artificial intelligence that's able to do all the things that human beings used to do, the need to find a way to self-actualize is going to become more and more important. But if we don't fundamentally change how wealth is created by the extraction of surplus value from labor, we are going to be in trouble. Not necessarily because the machines are going to rise up and terminator us, you know, that we're just going to start killing us, but that we're going to keep killing ourselves because we're not going to be able to realize who we really are, and we are not going to be given the freedom to pursue what it is that we can really do. So I want to be clear. If you're suffering from a mental health issue, it's not your fault. We live in a system that produces mental illness like it produces cheeseburgers. And we need to find a way to fix it. And that way is organizing together. That's the long-term strategy. But if you're suffering from a mental illness, or you are having issues with anxiety, I understand. You're not alone, but try to do something about it. You may have a penchant for drink, and there may be some good things for that. Not saying there isn't. You may like to smoke a bowl or a joint every now and then. Also, nothing wrong with that. But if you're using it as a way of coping with your life, you need some help. And there's nothing wrong with getting that help. It isn't your fault. It isn't a failure on your part. It's a failure of a system. And there's no reason for individuals to blame themselves for societal problems. So if you need to, go talk to somebody. Seek out some help. But recognize, I know, that it can be expensive and it can be an issue. But there's nothing more important than your mental health. But there's also nothing more important or imperative of changing the system that produces this significant problem. All right. That's it for me this week. Trying to keep them short and sweet. I'll be getting back into it now. I've got my shit figured out. So I will see you back in 2 weeks, where we're going to be talking about, hopefully, a revolutionary party and what's necessary. All right. See you then. Bye.